Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Good morning to you, Adam White.
Good morning.
Great to have you on board. Did you enjoy the MotoGP last night?
Didn't watch the MotoGP last
night.
No. I went to bed early because I wanted to be up early to watch the golf. And I'm very good today. I'm really, really good.
Rightio. Good to hear.
It's unusual.
I mean, really good on a Monday. It is unusual. But it's nice to have you on board. I'm surprised you didn't watch the Catalunya MotoGP. Jimmy Bartel would have. He loves motorsport. Morning, Jim.
Morning, half. Negative on the GP, sorry.
What do you mean?
No, I was not early, not late. I was just average time to bed. I skipped the GP, sorry. I recorded it to watch it another time.
That's a lie, Jim.
Yeah, it's a flat lie.
That's a flat-out lie, Jim.
No, but I'm good. Good.
Yeah, you're not very good like Whitey. Whitey's got you covered today.
No, I lost my wallet on the weekend.
Oh, the worst. That's something I'd do. Outcome.
I'd rather lose my phone because you can just go. You can go get another phone.
You can get a new phone easily.
Yeah. And you can normally save, you say you do, to the cloud or whatever, all your contacts, and or you send it 1,000, you know, new phone, who dis? Yeah, when people message you, you have no idea. But a wallet. All the stuff linked to your cards.
It is
and all
annoying.
And I thought for once I'd use the power of social media and just send out a thing on Instagram. Anyone in the Docklands area on Saturday, see a small brown wallet, send me a message. So I'd had every half-wit send me a message going, oh, I've got it. Like, oh, really? No, I don't.
Open yourself up to that type of situation, Jim.
I have faith in people.
Well, you shouldn't.
I know. I clearly learnt that the hard way, that people aren't nice. I've only come to this realisation at age 34 that people aren't nice.
No, that's a shocking thing. The lost wallet is a shocking thing. These days, you can get through because, well, some people can. I'm not sure if it's available on all phones, but you can get your sort of credit card and your Samsung Pay, your Apple Pay type situation.
Yeah.
And you can still have access to cash and pay for stuff. In the old days, if you lost your wallet and you lost your credit card or your ATM card in the even older days, you have no access to cash. And that would be the worst possible outcome for like 3 or 4 days.
Yeah. What you can do now, you can go on your phone because your phone banking straight away and you can just press pause on your credit card.
Can you?
So if someone thinks they're really clever and go try and use your card.
Do you imagine picking up Jimmy Bartel's credit card? Why do you think there's a bit on this?
Well, there's a bit on a spree here.
There's a bit of debt on there if they want to pick that up as well.
There's a spree here, Whitey.
We'll talk later on in the morning after the radio show. Just I'll counsel you through with my experience of losing wallets and phones and keys on a regular basis.
Yeah, before we get too deep into the sporting weekend, which is plentiful, as we well know, what about our good friends at Allen's? You know that conversation we had about bananas and strawberries and creams the other day?
Oh, strawberries and cream. When did you talk about this?
Our friends at Allen's, you can hear the rustling. They've sent us party mixes because we talked about the situation that both of the lollies, the banana, the time-honoured banana, and your rubbish strawberries and cream,
were involved
in the party mix. And they've thrown in some party mixes. They're sending through to the Breakfast Club party mix bag style. Yeah,
they've got the retro mix over there.
One for you.
For you, you're beauty.
They're actually... This is actually true.
I'm not making this up.
There's no bananas in it.
Well, yeah, I've got a banana right there.
Have you? Yeah. Well, we better swap because there's not enough bananas in this for my liking.
There is not a banana in here.
I've got one. They're right there.
Well, we're swapping, Jim, because that's unacceptable from our friends at Allen's.
So if you find my wallet, you can have it.
So there you go, Whitey. The people at Allen's were listening to our conversation the other day.
Talk about them more often.
And they've sent through the party mix. I must say, I'm disappointed that there's no banana in mine either, considering it is clearly the most dominant confectionery on the planet as far as I'm concerned.
It's the last one eaten for me in the bag.
There you go. Thank you.
You blokes.
Well, it's not the last.
It's dead last.
There's a black cat in there.
No. They're great. They're great, the black
cats. That's unacceptable from you blokes. The bananas are key.
Last stone medalist not coming off the bottom.
So would you eat it?
Yeah, of course I'd eat it.
Some people leave stuff.
No. That's un-Australian.
Right, well, I'm pleased about that. At least you eat it, but surely it's a go-to. It's like when you have dinner, you eat all the good stuff first and then eat the rubbish later.
No!
Yes. No, reverse order.
No, reverse order. You blokes.
You got some problems.
You leave the meat and the potatoes to the end.
Yes, the mashed potato.
In a race situation.
Why would you let the good stuff go cold?
No. You come home strong.
No. You blacks. The order of play here is really concerning me.
Geez, I can see how you'd act if you were a jockey. Let's just ride the best horse out straight away as fast as we can.
Slightly different scenario, Jim. No. But I'm happy to get out to a lead, put some scoreboard pressure on. How about that?
And lose.
No, you blokes. You blokes. All of you.
All of you.
Well, thank you to Alan for that. Nice to have some packs of lollies in here on a Monday morning. Not sure it's part of the regime, Whitey, but we'll talk about that at some stage. Hey, what was a highlight of you of the weekend for you, Jim?
Oh, I thought yesterday's game. Richmond v Geelong. Look, it was, and this has been my point regarding football. I saw a great contest, and I didn't have to see both sides kick 100-plus points. So I saw a physical contest. I saw Richmond. Still for me, Richmond are the team to beat. I know Sydney are playing some good footy. West Coast are playing some pretty damn good footy over the course of the year. They had a couple of injuries, and obviously Sydney were too good for them on Friday night. But as Ric Flair would say, to be the man, you've got to beat the man.
Yes.
And no one has proven to be able to beat the Tiggies at the MCG. Now, people can say, oh, they can't win away from home. But the fact is, you've got to beat...
Doesn't matter.
You've got to beat them at the MCG eventually.
Well, the only issue is going to be, whether or not they can survive through a finals campaign being 3-4, being teams 3-4 if there's interstate travel.
But they won't.
I know you've got to play still a home final at the MCG.
Yeah, they won't get away from the MCG. They'll lock away a top
But if
two.
West Coast are playing... Yeah, that's right. That's what I'm saying. If their team's 3-4... If they don't finish top two, which I'd find difficult to believe, I'm with you, Jim, I think they're the best team in it still, that is the challenge for them, should that eventuate. Now, hopefully, for their sake, it doesn't.
Now, understanding Geelong, of course, you can point to the fact that a number of players out, but also Richmond had Hooley out, who was very good on grand final.
Very influential.
Prestia was out. So they've still got a few to come back into that side as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're just humming along nicely.
All right. It's more on that after 7 with Rocket. Whitey, your highlight from the weekend?
Shitting under par in the back nine on Friday. That was my highlight. You asked me, I told you.
Weekend, Friday. Yeah, no, I'll cop that. What about the front nine? How'd you go there?
It was just in a development phase.
Development phase?
You've never seen a more contrasting nine-hole spread between the front and the back from Whitey.
Is it reflective of the conversation when you're walking around? Because when you play with some people, they're great conversationalists when they're playing well. But when they're going badly, they are the worst people to be with.
Yeah, he's a bit like that. he's a bit like that. Like he played like someone that's actually never played the game in the front nine. And then he played like Brooks Koepka, who we'll keep you up to date with for the latest results in the US Open, on the back nine. He was unbelievable. The contrast was ridiculous, Adam.
That's my golf. The highlight.
What happened at the turn? Ben, sorry. What happened at the turn?
I think he's sort of embellishing things a little bit, and it wasn't too bad.
Well, it was pretty bad.
Just couldn't hold putt.
The European Summer of Tennis kicks onto the grass court season after a bit of time on clay, and it's turned out to be a pretty good result for some Aussies across the weekend. Ash Barty won on the weekend, and she's going to join us tomorrow on The Breakfast Club. And Alex Dimonar, the young Aussie gun, took out the title at Nottingham, the ATP Challenger title at Nottingham, defeating Daniel Evans in the final. Great performance by the young Aussie. He's been good enough to join us on The Breakfast Club this morning. G'day, Alex. Well done.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're going very well. Thank you, buddy. How are you going after a win on the circuit against Daniel Evans in the final at Nottingham?
Yeah, pretty good. You know, it's been a win, long time brewing. I've had a couple of finals that I wasn't able to go on to the next step, and I'm happy with today. I was finally able to get past that.
Alex, you're absolutely in career best form. Even your ranking is at number 78, which is normally enough to get you into Wimbledon, but they closed the ranking 6 weeks ago. So how can you get into Wimbledon now?
Well, at this stage, I'm 2 out of Wimbledon at the moment. Oh. So I'm hoping for a couple pullouts or a friendly wild card. That will come in handy as well. So I've just got to wait until Tuesday. That's when they announce the wildcard. So hopefully I get in.
Are you feeling like you're going into games and you just got that winning mentality? Everything's just coming off. The timing's down right for you?
Yeah, at the moment I'm really happy with my level on court. I feel like, you know, I'm really confident. And every time I step out on court, I'm playing some great tennis. So it's great for me, especially on this surface. I really enjoy the grass, and I'm enjoying every second I'm on it.
What?
Oh, sorry, Alex. Is there a part of your game when that's on, you go, I know I'm on. So the first serve's just going exactly where you want it, or is it the forehand? Is there a part of your game that's, I guess, a trigger for you to know today's my day?
Well, I reckon these last couple of weeks are the most important aspect of my game. It's probably been my serve. You know, I've actually served well 2 weeks in a row, and that really complements the rest of my game. You know, I'm able to play more freely in my returns games, and that does do a lot for me. So when that is going on, then everything else seems to click in as well.
What's your background on the grass, Alex?
Well, I haven't really had too much time on the grass. You know, before I ever stepped foot on grass, I decided that I was going to enjoy the grass and that was going to be my favourite surface. So I think I sort of psyched myself to love it. And from then on, it's a surface that I look forward to each year. And the grass season is probably my favourite surface of my favourite season of the year.
Obviously, you had a terrific summer here in Australia and sort of announced yourself as one of Australia's best young talents coming through. What did you learn from that experience of, being recognised a lot more, the pressure of expectation rising that sort of takes you into that next swing of tennis outside Australia?
Well, obviously in the Australian summer, I played some great tennis and had some amazing results that I really never thought of. But that helped me, realise what I'm capable of. And, an important thing for me was to try and maintain that level throughout the whole year. It's obviously harder to play outside of home because you obviously don't have that home support and that crowd. But I've been able to find my rhythm here on the grass season.
How tricky is that whole thing of having to just, give it your best every time, that you can't have those little down periods, that you've just got to be relentless? And I know Leighton has a big role in your career as a bit of a mentor, just to be out there, especially the way you play, to be at your best every single time.
Yeah, it's really important every time you step out on court to give it your all, especially when you're playing matches, you can't have any lapses of concentration, and that's obviously something that I've been trying to work on to be able to maintain my focus throughout the whole match. And I think that's probably the next step for me. Once I'm able to get that better, then my whole game will improve.
So you talked before, Alex, about being in the position like you were in the final at Nottingham to play in a final and try and win tournaments before, and it hasn't happened up until this week. And even as recently as last week at Surbiton, you played Jeremy Shardy in the final and lost in three. What did you take out of that loss that was able to get through? What's it situation-wise, I suppose, against our British friend yesterday, Daniel Evans?
Well, I've had a couple final losses, and I decided that going into this one, I was going to stay calm and remain positive throughout the whole match. And that sort of mindset and attitude was really important for me today, because there was times and stages of the match where things weren't really going my way, but I managed to stay calm, find some clarity, and be able to play some great tennis when I needed it.
Rodney Ead would have been casting a very, very keen eye across them, I'm sure. Former coach of the Western Bulldogs, the Sydney Swans, and, of course, the Gold Coast Suns. Joins us as our Monday analyst on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Rocket.
Morning, Daniel. How are you?
Going very well. How's your weekend?
Very relaxing, actually.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, so not too bad. Had no game, so that was good, no coaching. And then, as you were the MC yesterday, I had a Hawthorn reunion weekend.
A festival.
They had three events, so they didn't leave it by half, the Hawkers, but so it was a good weekend.
Do you enjoy catching up with your premiership teammates? Is it a good thing to do?
Yes, it is. I think, I don't want to sound glib about it, but when you have a few, you sort of,
just another one.
But it was good. It was good to see the guys on the weekend.
You'll be getting used to that, Jim, coming up shortly. Love all these. Oh, buddy, another one. Another premiership reunion coming up.
We had 07, you've had that one in 10
yeah,
years.
Yeah, see, real smart. Everyone thinks, oh, you couldn't win back-to-back, but if you stagger them over 2 years, you can pace yourself.
Little two-year windows.
Yeah, two-year windows,
you
yeah.
planned it beautifully.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to tell ourselves.
You'll be in a constant state of reunion.
Or rehab.
One of the two.
Yeah, one of the two.
One of the two. And we had to wait, Rocket, to Sunday afternoon for the best game with Geelong and Richmond for the weekend. Just the six games, of course, in the bye round. Mm. But Geelong and Richmond was the best, and we saw the Tigers rocket their way back up to the top of the table.
Yes, they did really well. Now, their pressure was excellent. I thought the Cats had their opportunities at times. They just didn't use the ball as well as they normally can. And that was even without enormous pressure at times. I know it was wet conditions. Mm-hmm. So I think the Cats would be able to take a bit out of the game.
Yeah, yeah. I reckon they've done that in the last couple of years in the big games. They've just turned the footy over or haven't used it as well as they should going inside 50. It's always been something they've been trying to work on. And I think with Gazza back, and I think that's the want for people at Geelong, for Gazza to play a little bit more forward half because, you know, coaching him, he makes such good decisions with the ball and is a good kick going inside 50.
Yeah, he didn't kick it that well yesterday, no. Which is unusual. One in the back pocket there turned over and then a couple going inside 50, which players have those days. But like him and Daniel Wells at Collingwood, and that's why they got Daniel Wells, having that ability to make the right decision and have good skill, especially going inside 50, is gold.
Rocket, is there any benefit anymore for you've coached young sides to send young players along to games like Richmond v Geelong? Because you watch that game, the intensity is through the roof compared to young sides going at it. You can just see the difference, whether you follow the sides or not, watching on TV or at the ground. Is there any benefit still in sending young players to watch a Richmond v Geelong at the MCG like a supporter, but also that's the intensity you need to get to?
Oh, for sure. There's no doubt about that. I think the more you can learn, the better. And I think, you know, you'd send, well, you wouldn't send 30 at the one time, but you'd send 6 or 8 with a coach and be able to look at the positioning, about how they put pressure on, where they go, and the intensity of the game. Yeah, I think the more they can learn, the more that they get exposed to that, the better they work.
It's a difference from watching it on TV, though, isn't it?
I think our game is a live game. There's no doubt. I don't think it's so much a TV game. And I think on TV, you can't see where players are outside the next kick, either side of the play. So I think better going to the game. And I think, like a defensive coach could take the six backs and even development, you know, take the players that play in the VFL, be able to go to see the game and see how the best do it.
One of the interesting things from yesterday was Geelong keeping Richmond to 83 points, which is something that most teams haven't been able to do at the MCG to Richmond. So I think they would get confidence out of that. But Jimmy, just interested in, as a Geelong player leaving the game last night, even though they didn't win, knowing that they've still got Menzel, Scott Selwood, Taylor, Guthrie, Cockatoo, Henderson to come back into that team,
yep,
would they feel that they're closer to Richmond than what they may have thought they were, or because they've got them later in the year again at the MCG?
Yeah, from a Geelong point of view, you take confidence out of it. I guess if you're the Geelong coaching panel, you've got to make a decision next time you come back to play the Tigers at the MCG. How many of those young players have learned from the last experience and you're back that they're going to get better? Or do you go back to the old hands who have been there and you know what you're going to get? Because they're young players and you go up and down with your form, but it was the bottom, always in the big games, it's the bottom 4 or 5 players that make the difference, because we knew what we were going to get from Joel Selwood, but we knew what we were going to get from the Richmond veterans like Rance. It was the bottom half dozen. I came away from the game thinking Richmond's bottom half dozen, I'm being respectful here, were much better than Geelong's bottom half dozen.
But most of them might not play.
Yeah, so
when
but
they play again later in the year.
That'd be the questions being asked by the Geelong coaching panel. If we've got, you know, some senior players and these young players that we went with last time, what's the balance? Do we back them in and hope that they've learnt from their previous experience, or do we go back to some old hands who did some of our older stuff? Because a lot of these young players are pressure players at the moment at Geelong. You know, you look at, is he Fogarty or Fogarty? I get confused which one the Geelong one is.
Fogarty.
Yeah, we'll go with Fogarty. Yeah, do we go with Fogarty again on the forward line, or is that Menzel's spot now? Yeah. Who can hit this? We know Menzel is a goal kicker, but he's not a pressure player. Do we go back to Someone with a bit more experience on the half back line. I know he's taller, but you know, Harry Taylor or Henderson, or instead of Zach Guthrie. So that will be the questions. They'll certainly have confidence, but then it becomes a selection issue.
Well, I think, just taking a step further back to the MCG fact, I think yesterday it's not necessarily about winning for Geelong. They just needed to know, I reckon, they can compete with Richmond at the MCG, considering their dominance.
And considering what happened in that final last year.
Yeah, and at three-quarter time, it's a point. Like, it's anyone's game from that point of time onwards. Richmond overran them in the end with the way that they play and got a few goals out the back. But I think Geelong take a heap out of that.
Yeah, because from this time to last year is the midfield depth. Richmond were fantastic around the ball. Last time they played Geelong in that final, they smashed them around the ball, so you immediately play the territory game and that pressure. Whereas this time around, you've got Gazza, Tim Kelly, Menegola's found his role, and then probably the one that will add to that mix is Scott Selwood when he's right. So they've actually got more depth to be able to compete against Richmond, who are super strong around that part of the ground.
Yeah, and Shane Edwards continued his good form for the Tigers. I mean, he's had some sort of year,
hasn't
he?
Player, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's a terrific player. What, how old is he? 29, 30, isn't he?
Yeah, he's 30, I reckon.
30 years old. And he's probably playing his best footy.
Yeah.
So fantastic effort.
And my favourite player, Nick Vlossen.
Your mate was very good, wasn't he?
He was dominant yesterday. You don't have to have 30-odd possessions, but yeah, I think he had 21. But he
won some real vital ball at times, didn't he?
He looks strong, and he marks the footy. I love guys who marks
the ball really well yesterday.
Yeah. I love guys who back themselves in the end. Those conditions yesterday wasn't really conducive to doing that.
Yeah.
But he looked really assured over the high ball.
And we spoke to Jack last week, Whitey, about the Tigers and the way that they've been playing. Jack Rewalt, I'm speaking of. And he was talking about that probably hasn't been as clinical as perhaps last year, but they still found themselves, after round 13, on top of the ladder. They're a bloody good team.
Look, there's three teams now that are two games clear of everybody else. But the problem for Richmond is that two of the others, well, the other two, are non-Victorian teams. So they've still got to find a way to make sure they're not third and that they're second.
Because it's going to be an enormous advantage for those interstate teams if they finish top two.
Absolutely. So I'm not saying that there's anyone going to jump up and sort of contend for that sort of top two spot, because there's still plenty of the season to go. But it's rare, Rocket, for there to be a gap of two games already with three teams.
Yeah, I think the competition's got some demarcation lines in it already, and it's down to 10 teams, which at the moment you won't think Adelaide are going to make it. So the Giants or the Hawks fall over at any stage, or even the Kangas, I suppose. So it's those three teams are probably for the last spot.
Mm. We're trying to do the maths as to how many you need to get in. I reckon you're going to need minimum 13 and a half.
You probably, I haven't gone through the draw, but it's probably who plays the bottom four teams the most. if you get, so that's going to be some. You know,
and that's an advantage to Hawthorn, which we'll talk about the Hawks shortly. But you look at some of them. They've got Gold Coast, the Giants, which is tough because it's in Sydney. Then they've got the Bulldogs, Brisbane, and Carlton. That's their next five. Mm. Put four in the book there.
Yeah, it's probably down to the bottom five now that with the Bulldogs' injuries. There's probably five teams that teams have chalk up on the board, you'd think.
I think we've got to train. We've got to train it. I mean, sport doesn't give you an easy out. Yeah, and we're not playing well. We've got to train it. We've got to get guys back in a headspace where, you know, they're able to bring their strengths that they've got. There's still a lot of talent in that room, you know, and we're not seeing it at the moment. So that's our challenge from a coaching viewpoint. That's their challenge from a playing viewpoint. But there's no easy way out of these situations. We've got to do the work. And, you know, that's what we'll focus on. Do the right work in the right areas to get improvement. Because, as you can see, we were around the mark at half-time, but we just didn't sustain it to the level at Hawthorn were. And it's been the same the last couple of weeks.
We've got to train it. That's what we're going to do. We've got to train properly. We've got to train it. The Adelaide Crows coach, Don Pike, there talking after the loss to Hawthorn on Saturday night at the MCG. It was by enough, 56 points in the end. Just the 35 inside 50s for Adelaide as they were kept to 32 points full stop.
Lowest score since 2011.
That's a long time. And considering the way that they've been playing their footy of recent years and how aggressive and attacking they've been, be kept to 32 points, it's got to be a bit of a red flag, doesn't
it? Yeah, you can see their style of play. It was really, obviously the Melbourne game has knocked the stuffing out of them, but even a couple of games before that, they weren't taking the game on as much. They played down the line, and their brand really has been set up well behind the ball. And on the counter-attack, just quick hands and quick movement, whether they just their injuries in the middle of the ground, or whether the forward line, they just haven't got confidence about the ball comes back out too quickly. But you really see now they're really stagnant and just not scoring.
Coaches love to say if there's an injury, the next man up just fills the role. But sometimes it's just the capability of the player can't do that role. You take out Brody Smith, people forget. He's that rebounding halfback. The desk, Rory Laird.
Yeah.
They were missing another one across halfback as well that I can't remember. Is it just sometimes, you know, that line that coaches love to use, next one in, just doesn't apply?
Oh, there's no doubt. There's a tipping point.
Mm.
And if you lose a really good player, say in your best three or four, say a Sloan, you're replacing him with 25 or 26 on the list. So there is a huge gap of talent. Now, generally, teams might be able to cope with that. But once you mount it up, A, in numbers, or B, in quality, as in three or four good quality players, it can really impact you. And I think it's worn them down, and I think it reached a tipping point probably the Melbourne game, maybe the week before, and just haven't recovered.
And you even see in the SANFL at the moment, they got whacked on the weekend. I think they scored about three goals or something like that for the game. So it's just, it has a ripple effect down.
It has. And you have a look at the Giants early in the year. They're just starting to get their players back. And their Neefel side was getting smacked. And I know some media commentators here in Melbourne were bagging them and saying, oh, they're hopeless because they're Neefel team. But it's just the numbers. If you're losing numbers, as in quantity, but certainly quality, it does impact you.
And it does show how good Geelong has been to get to 8-5, considering the injuries that they've had, to really important players in the forward line, the midfield and defence. It has been quite incredible.
Do you think Geelong's had the equivalent of Rory Sloane, Brad Crouch, Rory Laird, Tom Lynch, Mitch McGovern and Brody Smith, though?
No.
Well,
no, they haven't.
No. Short answer is no.
Menzel, Scott Selwood, Taylor, Guthrie, Cockatoo, Henderson, Ablett missed 4 weeks.
Cockatoo, Henderson into that batch of players that Jimmy's read out of Adelaide. I mean, they were the stars of the team.
Mm.
Cockatoo's a fine young player. Henderson's a
Cockatoo hasn't really played football at
all. No, I know that. But then Ablett missed a fair bit of footy as well.
But he's played a fair bit compared to those blokes.
Yeah.
But it is a concern because, as you said before,
they were going bad, though, before a few of those got injured.
True.
As Rocket said before, it's down to 10, Adelaide are 11th. So to make the grand final and then miss the finals the next year.
Well, yeah, well, the Bulldogs last year.
Yep.
They were premiers and missed the final. So, I think it's too big a chore now from where they are. I know they're not far out as in mathematically, but they've got a tough draw. I know they get some players back. The players back, the ones who have missed more than 3 weeks, will take a week or two to really get some sort of conditioning for games. So I think it's too big an ask for them.
Put a red line through them. 6-7, a percentage of only 100. They've lost 6 in a row. And the next 5 are West Coast, Richmond, Geelong, Brisbane and Melbourne.
Ooh, that's Gustavo's.
Goodbye.
That may be curtains. What about the Hawks? Are they playing as well as you would like to see them play? Or do you think there's still plenty of improvement? Or is this their level, Rocket, do you think?
I think it's about their level. Obviously, if Cyril comes back, and whether we don't know that will improve them.
Yes.
I think having the two rucks helps because it gives Ruffy some support in the forward line. They've always defended well. They played Port Adelaide the week before, and it was 9 goals each. So they do defend. They kept Adelaide. I know that we've talked about them. They're struggling kicking goals. But they do defend. They've always defended well.
Mm.
And it's on the back of their defence they do attack. They've struggled to score, I think. Sicily kicking 3 helped them, but that was just obviously they've pressed up. That'll be against the better sides as their ability to kick goals. But having said that, once they get in the 8 and there's a chance with their draw that they can get into 7th or 8th, they'll certainly scare some teams.
Adelaide didn't have a clearance in the third quarter. Not one.
That does seem unusual.
Didn't score in the third quarter.
The two rucks work for Hawthorn because they can both mark the footy.
Yeah.
So if you play two rucks, you can't have one of them who's just a centre bounce hit it and then just jogs around the ground. So we've seen Big Boy, he can get around the ground really well, but Segler marked the footy really well the other night.
He did, and he gave them a bit of an option up forward, so you've got to be mindful of him. I mean, he's not going to kick 6, I wouldn't have thought, at any stage, but if he kicks a couple and takes a couple of marks, he can feed off, and that takes the pressure off Roughhead.
It's the old David Hale role, isn't it? He sort of sits in the pocket, kicks you 1 or 2, but goes in and plays as a genuine ruck.
I've asked this a number of times, and I'll ask it again. James Sicily.
Oh.
Now, he's my boy. Would you keep him as a key position defender or whatever?
Yes.
You know, or would you be? You wouldn't be tempted to play him forward?
No.
Yes.
This is, how many times have we discussed this? If a guy is All-Australian quality, he hasn't made an All-Australian side, but he'd be pretty close this year, in a position, why is this fascination to Well, let's turn him into something else.
He started as a forward, didn't he? But he's playing that good. Why would you risk putting him in the forward line and it could be a bust and then his confidence goes and then you play someone else in the
back line? He's the most damaging halfback in the game at the moment.
No, I know that. I'm just,
you types, you. I'm just going to wag my pen.
I'm just saying that with you look at the draw, and I'll say it again, Hawthorn, they got Gold Coast in Tassie, then Giants away, Bulldogs, Brisbane in Tassie and Carlton.
So you're being arrogant and flaunting with your form?
Yes.
I would throw him forward just to see what happens.
Well, I can tell you what happens.
He could destroy games as a
centre. He just destroyed a game at a halfback.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
That's what he said.
I'd like to see him go forward and see.
Why?
Well, they are having issues
because
in the
forward half. Because they're having issues with their forwards. And if he can kick three goals at centre back or whatever the role he plays in a quarter,
but
could he do if he was playing as a permanent forward?
They've got enough forwards who can turn their form around.
Can I put something to you?
Yeah.
These are questions. These aren't statements.
If you were James Sicily was in the forward line playing against you, what would you do or what would you tell his opponent to do?
You'd drive him into the ground.
Niggle the hell out of him and he'd lose his SH1T and... No, it's a risk.
It's different coming from the back and kicking goals and having less, no one really playing on you, rather than being forward and have someone right up your tail.
You're getting told to take a walk outside in match committee. Okay, go have 5 minutes.
I'm just throwing that there as questions.
Yeah, I'm yellow carding you from match committee. You can come back, not quite a red card.
I think it's too risky, to be honest. I think with his temperament and the opposition, what they could do and they'd focus on him, I think... Maybe could lose his way a bit.
Okay.
Just the way the game's being played now with that high-pressing forward half zone. This is a guy who can get it and just completely ruin your zone.
Yeah, no, that's a fair call.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
We've spoken in the group. Simple question is why didn't we want to win the game? Why didn't we want to win the game? We did so well in the first three quarters and proud of their effort to be at that point, but that's what makes it harder to swallow because of the last quarter. Because the effort was really good in the first three quarters.
And that is the voice of Stewie Jew, who's slightly concerned about his players' mindset in the last quarter against St Kilda up there at Metricon Stadium on Saturday night. Fascinating evening of football watching to see what happened. They had such a stranglehold on the game, and they go down and cough it up by 2 points. Rodney Eads with us, our Monday analyst on The Breakfast Club. Fascinating, I think, this game, full stop, for so many storylines. And if Jade Gresham doesn't kick that goal...
Good goal.
Which was a terrific goal in the last minute of the play. I'm sure it's a very different conversation in terms of where the football community faces this morning, Jim. It's about Alan Richardson and the Saints. So 2 points makes the difference, or effectively 3 points would be a loss, makes the difference between Alan Richardson being the headline act and the Saints getting off the hook again. It's a funny game we live in.
Yeah, how many articles do you reckon were filed at three-quarter
time? It would have been a few, I reckon.
Do you reckon, though, they've pressed pause on them? They haven't thrown them out?
I'd be saving a copy.
Yeah.
I'd be saving a copy. But remarkable that the storyline changes on the back of one kick.
Yeah. Well, the whole last quarter was typical of the Gold Coast. They play three quarters of football. The last four quarters, I think it is. Is it 2 points?
Four last quarters.
So 200 minutes of football. They've kicked 2 points.
It's an extraordinary stat, that. It really is.
And to make it even worse, St Kilda were without two players. So Bailey Rice was... in Noddy Land.
Yep.
He thought he was at Dreamworld on the Gold Coast, and Webster was hurt, and they had minus 40 possessions.
So it was unbelievable. I thought when Webster went off at the 6 minute mark and then the Suns were on top, they looked slow, St Kilda. They looked really slow, except for Jack Stephen. They looked really slow. I thought, without Webster, how are they going to win this? How are they going? And they just, obviously, the Suns stopped, but the Saints showed, they dug deep, which is a real credit to them. They need. And we've spoken about it here, haven't we, that we thought their effort was being good at times for most of the games, and they're still getting beaten. So if that's their maximum effort, they need to bring that for four quarters every week to get a chance to win.
Watching Whitey, did it say to you that the Saints were playing for the coach, the old adage?
I don't think they've ever not been playing
for
the coach.
No, but did it even show up
Maybe a little bit. I thought, and was there a lesson in it for St Kilda that, because it happened against West Coast as well, and to a lesser extent against Fremantle. When they get behind, they worry less about the outcome and they free up and they just play on instinct as opposed to overthink things.
Well, maybe the other way.
Is that a lesson?
But are they overthinking it? Is that being coached that way by the assistant coaches? Are they giving them too much information?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm asking is that, you know, you get five goals down going in the last quarter. Hey, we've just got to run and gun and just take it on and not worry about the ramifications.
I think their ball movement, the first three quarters, they were clear at times and then they do a U-turn to handball backwards and they overpossess and they got turned over. And then when they were about 70 out, they just bombed it forward. They had two modes and they both weren't working. Then the last quarter, they were tougher, they lifted their intensity, they tackled more, but they went forward more quickly. Mm. They didn't muck around with the ball. They didn't overpossess.
That's my point, yeah, because they had to because the game was running out of time.
Could it be the other way, though? They are actually thinking about it. Or maybe ask you, Daniel, that last quarter, geez, if we lose this, what will this week be like?
Well, that's what actually impressed me from St Kilda, I must say. With the pressure going into the game from the football world on them, to be 30, whatever the points down they were at three-quarter time, and be able to come back and not have that weight of, oh, my God, the world's about to cave in.
But could that have been the thinking, though, that helped lift them? Like, if you didn't give it more than everything, I know that sounds funny.
That could... Yeah, you could take that either way. That could make or break you at three-quarter
time. I think
the
way they've played this year, I wouldn't have thought that was the case.
Okay. Yeah,
I would have thought behaviour and their consistency of what they're doing. I think it's more that shivers, we've got to do something here. It's more like the pressure's off a bit and let's not overthink it. Let's just go and do. Yep. And I think previously maybe it's a bit more analytical and a bit more we've got to go from A to B to see we've got to have this many handballs. We've got to do whatever the case may be. And I think the shackles are off.
That's how I sort of saw it.
Yeah. And I think, and you were, even in good sides like you guys, you can't overthink it too much. Yep. You can't, as a player, it's see ball, get ball, maybe your positioning at times, but if you've got too much going through your head, it actually takes it away from you.
Because we've seen that with Collingwood this year, that they seem to have simplified.
I reckon they're just playing, yeah.
When they've got the ball in their hands, hey, you guys, you take responsibility on yourself. You do what you think is appropriate as opposed to anything that's been coached during the week.
The Kangas a bit as well are doing that.
I think
that's what Richmond did.
I think there's parameters that they play in, obviously, they've got the game plan, but within those parameters, if you drill down too much as a coach and you make it too complex, you know, we have to kick it to A, and if that's not on, then look for B and look for C, and there's too much going on. There's too many. They've got to instinctively take the option. I think they did that.
So let's not miss the Suns here. We brought up the fact that they just play three quarters. Like, they'll go, oh, we're young, we're this, we're that. Is it fitness or is it mindset?
Well, they started to put some players back, but the other 3 weeks, they've parked the bus in your terms. So that's been tactical.
Yep.
And they haven't tried, against the Giants, they didn't try to move the ball out of the back 50. They just went slow, wide. Against Port Adelaide, it was the same. So it's a combination probably of fitness, I think, mindset. Do they freeze themselves? And see, is it tactical that sends a message to freeze? So, we're not trying to score. We are trying to save it. Numbers back. So let's play careful.
Stuart Dew says that he asked the players, did they want to win, what was he doing in the coach's box that set them up to win?
Yeah, it's hard to say on the TV, to be honest. They didn't seem to have... I mean, Lynch seemed to be down across the middle of the ground or back a fair bit of the quarter, so I'm not too sure what he did and what he didn't do, to be honest.
Yeah, they're hard to tell from the TV. But, I mean, if that's the tactic of not wanting to move the ball forward in the last quarter and try and park the bus and save, it hasn't worked very well. They've lost five in a row, at least.
I think they tried to score early because Lemons had a shot, kicked it out in the full. Ainsworth looked as though he was running into 50 and fell over.
That was
over.
A huge moment.
Whether he got tripped or not, that was probably questionable. But that was late in the game. Probably about the 10-minute mark. Once they scored their second St Kilda, it seemed as if there was a real shift of numbers back for the Suns.
I must confess, watching it, I was thinking of you in that the lack of leadership on the field, which is what you've spoken about, the lack of seniority in that team at the moment, and Michael Barlow playing in the kneeful for whatever reason. They just don't have enough senior players out there that when the game is getting away to take hold of the match.
Yeah, that's obviously one thing they've got. Obviously, they had a couple. Richitelli was there and Lyons was back. I thought Witts played quite well. He's probably not a super experienced player. Lynch is a leader. But, yeah, there are, as Jim said, they are still a young side and they certainly need to learn that leadership part.
It was a disaster for the Gold Coast Suns, what it was, and a bit of a godsend for St Kilda, just pushing away the Wolves just for a little while.
Now, can I talk about Carlton?
You can talk about Carlton.
By all means.
I want to ask a question. Should clubs be rewarded with priority picks or compensation of any type for poor management?
Well, they don't get priority picks.
Well, they might get a priority pick. They said they didn't want one, but that doesn't mean if they were given one, you reckon they'd knock it back?
Yeah, no, they wouldn't. No one would knock it back.
But with priority picks, let's even deeper, not so much on Carlton. Last week, the question was, do the Suns need priority picks? And there was a big push for that. But if they need one, they've won more games than St Kilda, Brisbane and Carlton.
Yep.
So they need priority. If you're going to give four teams, and you can't just give one and not the others, if you only give one, if they all get priority picks, does that dilute the draft that much? If I was at one of the other clubs, to answer your question, I suppose, I'd be filthy.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think they should be.
But my view is that there should be none.
No, I agree.
There's two things that should go. Priority picks and any ambassadorial contracts to anyone.
I'm all for ambassadorial contracts.
I am too.
100%.
The reason why it is a lot more difficult to make the marketing arrangements for a player in the northern states.
It is. And they're trying to get people up there to stay there and grow the game and do it from the grassroots and build organically from the local kids. And you need ambassadors, you need heroes, as we've talked about a lot on this show in the last couple. You need heroes to look up to and want to emulate. And that's where the ambassadorial stuff is really important. Now, I wouldn't be including in any way part of the discussion for a contract. The ambassador stuff should be done on, like, in January. Contract's done by the 31st of October, whatever it is. Then the AFL come in over the summer and say, right, we're going to make you an ambassador. So it doesn't influence the decision of the player or the club saying, we'll back off our contract payments because you're going to get $1 million ambassador.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think there should be some ambassadorial role because the Suns and Giants pay more. They overpay their players to be able to keep them safe, so therefore they hit their salary cap quicker. The only problem with what you're saying is a bit like the Swans had the COLA and the cost of living. They know it's coming anyway, so we won't include it in your contract, Adam, but not in a wink. Now, we've probably got another couple hundred K for you down the track.
Yeah,
that's coming. But I certainly agree that there needs to be something for the Suns and Giants especially, and Brisbane, that the Northern States, that it's tougher to keep them, and... I think there should be, and how that's audited and how that's laid out, I think there needs to be some work on it and needs to be accountable on it, not any loose form, but I think they need some help.
Let's touch base with the Melbourne Storm CEO, Dave Donaghy, who's had a big weekend because the coach is on board again. It is a massive relief, I'm sure. Dave, good morning.
Morning, guys. How are you?
We're going very well, thank you. A big win for the club as well yesterday, so it's been a really positive weekend. But how confident were you, Dave, of getting the signature of Craig Bellamy?
Yeah, very confident all the way through, to be honest. I think for us it was all about the positive aspects of why he wanted to remain in Melbourne. And for me, there's a real big challenge there for Craig. And yeah, that's we've got some great future models of the game coming towards the end of their career and. Next generation of talent that's emerging and the opportunity there to win a premiership with those guys. And, you know, his relationship with his players is quite special. So, look, he's a very loyal guy and, thankfully, look, it took a little bit longer than what we would have liked and it was probably a little bit more public than what we would have liked. The right outcome was reached in the end.
So, Dave, take us through how it happens. Does he knock on your door and sit down and say, I've come to a decision? Does he ring you up and tell you? Do you get an email from his manager? How did you get the news?
No, he actually called me at about 10:30 on Friday night and told me that, he was leaning that way for a little period of time, but he called me that night and just said, look, I'm in and, it's the right thing for everyone involved and we agreed, which is a great result. But look, as I said earlier, it was a little bit more public and a little bit longer than what we would have liked. I think I initially started speaking to his former management company for the grand final week last year, so that's how long it took, and there was a management split in there and a little sort of non-exclusive period of non-negotiation. So that was part of the behind the scenes reason as to why it took so long. It wasn't anything untoward, and pleasingly, it's as I said, the right result was reached. I think not only for us but also footy in the country.
Dave, did you feel like the Storm, in a way, were a little bit disrespected, I guess, in the running commentary of it? You know, Brisbane Broncos, the big all-conquering club with a big checkbook and things like that, that Storm wasn't taken into account in the same manner?
Yeah, I do. It's something that, I suppose, just comes with the territory of not of, of being a little bit out of sight, out of mind when you're not in a you know, in the fishbowl that is the Northern States of rugby league. But you know, we're we are one of the biggest rugby league clubs in the country. I understand the shiny new toy up the road in the or the opportunity of a shiny new toy up the road in the Broncos, and you know, one team, one town in Brisbane. But you know, we're a one team, one town organisation in Melbourne, of a city of 4.5 million. So look, I think there's a lot of great things that are happening at Storm. You know, we've got, I think we had the largest TV audience of any sports team in Melbourne last year. We've got the largest social reach of any sports organisation in Melbourne. So, you know, those things, I don't think were really, you know, they often get overlooked, and, you know, they're not not particularly sexy headlines, I suppose. So, look, it does, you know, frustrate me a little bit, but, you know, that's all in the past now, thankfully.
A bit of a different one. You mentioned the immortals that the Storm have had and will have. Obviously, the big three, Cronk, who's moved on, but Slater and Smith. We've been talking all morning about young clubs and their development. How do the Storm keep just finding some young talent and then turn them into superstars?
Yeah, I think it's the system that operates. You know, it's not just one person, and I know the coach. The great thing about him is that, you know, he acknowledges all the hard work that everyone around him does to make him be better at what he does. And, you know, he does his role very well as head coach, but that's what he does. He coaches a team, and, you know, he's got some wonderful people around him, whether it's Frank Panisi, the head of football. You know, Frank's responsible for everything that goes around outside of coaching and the whole culture of you know, the footy department. But, you know, wider than that, you know, we feel like we've got you know, the best recruiter, the best welfare people, the best development coaches, the you know, the best financial people, the best commercial people. So it's a really nice position to be in when you're leading an organisation that's you know, got some wonderful people in there, because at the end of the day, you're only as good as your people. So I think, you know, Craig's been very much you know, of that mindset for a long, long time, and you know, he's surrounded himself with some really capable, highly skilled, and really passionate and hard-working, you know, rugby league people around him.
A bit of cricket to talk about. Usman Khawaja has headed across to the UK to play some county cricket after a bit of a spell from the domestic scene. He's been good enough to join us on the Breakfast Club. G'day, Uzi.
G'day, boys. How you doing?
We're going very well. Thank you, buddy. Your form is pretty good at the moment. Glamorgan, you just rock up, make tons. Is that just the business these days?
It just sounds easy when you say it like that. Yeah.
What's the build-up been like for you, though, before you got over there? What had you been up to?
Literally, I hadn't hit any balls at all. I'd been training a fair bit, just been running a lot, been going to the gym, and just was doing a lot of physical stuff, because I wasn't expecting to go there till the end of June for the T20 stuff. So when they asked me to come early, I was literally, hadn't hit it. I probably hit maybe 30 balls before I got over there, and then had a training session when I got there. I felt pretty rusty that first innings. I think I was also a little bit jet lagged, and then I tried to get a few more hits in after that. But yeah, it was straight into it. Literally hadn't done anything for about 2 months in South Africa.
I think you're giving advice to everyone. Just don't have a pre-season. Just get straight into it.
No, I had a pre-season. It was just full of running and in gym. Yeah. There wasn't any hitting any balls.
Don't get bad ideas into people about just not hitting balls and running all the time. That's not fun
that
for anyone.
Yeah, I would never advocate that.
Just the whole thing of going over there, obviously, as you said, you were going more for the short-form cricket than the long-form, but how important is it for your confidence to get some runs and spend some time in the middle in English conditions, considering what happens next year?
Yeah, it's always nice. You know, at the end of the day, every game you play is a new game. It feels different, but I've been here over here a few times now and scored a few hundreds. So it's nice to know that I've obviously scored a few hundreds around the grounds here, because obviously coming over here for any type of cricket, but in particular if I come over here next year for the Ashes, that's about as tough as it gets. In terms of tour, probably Ashes and playing in India is probably the two toughest places, I reckon. So it's always nice. And as I said, it was unexpected. I wasn't coming here for the Red Bull stuff. But, yeah, I'm glad glad I can contribute.
Did you need a break, Usman, from competing, considering what had happened in the congested calendar of cricket for so long and being on the road for so long before you got back home and what happened in South Africa, which I'm sure would have been mentally draining as well for everyone involved in the camp. Did you need a break from just competing to just chill out for a bit?
Yeah, I did last year. I felt really drained, to be honest, after the Ashes. I know a few of the other guys did too. I was really tired. It didn't hit me until it all finished, and I was like, oh boy, that's caught up to me. So when going over to South Africa, I just knew all I had to do was give it all for another, 4 or 5 weeks, and I'd have a break somewhat. But I think the amount of cricket we played last year, leading into that last year in South Africa, I think I was just pretty tired from that in general. And that's why I sort of, had 2 months off where I wasn't hitting balls. I was just sort of working on fitness and doing that sort of stuff, staying away from the game.
Can you explain to us the intensity that's required to play in an Ashes tour and obviously in South Africa as well against the absolute best? I would imagine it'd be hard to explain, but can you give it a go?
Yeah, I think it's more about just the mind. You just don't switch off. I don't think people realise that when you're playing cricket and you're away on a tour, you're even in the middle of a test series, you play a 5-test series, and you can go for about 2 months and you just do not switch off the whole time because you're thinking about the next game, the next innings, what you got to do to prepare. It's one of those things where it just, it's sapping after a while. And 4-day, 5-day cricket is as tough as it gets. And people don't realise that we actually, we get up early in the morning. If the game's starting at 10, we're up by 6:37. We're at the ground about an hour and a half, 2 hours before the game starts. If the game finishes at 5 and everyone's leaving, sometimes it can go to 5:30, 6 if it rains. Then we're in the change rooms until 7 o'clock, at least an hour and a half after the game. So we're spending a lot of time at the ground. Those 5 days just seems like you're literally living on the ground. And then obviously it's very hard to switch off because you're always thinking about what to do next and how you can do better and everything that goes with it. So, after a big series, it actually is quite draining, let alone just one test match.
Now, you're a more relaxed guy than a lot of the others in the Australian team. When you are back at the hotel or, getting breakfast or whatever, are you someone that is just thinking the whole time about what's Stuart Broad bowling or what's Jimmy Anderson bowling or what's coming next? Or are you someone that can block that out between when you actually arrive at the ground and when you're lying in bed or when you're having your breakfast in a hotel?
I think I'm better than a lot of the other guys in the team. A real on the edge. I'm fortunate in that way, but I'm still thinking about it. It's international cricket. Even when it's not international cricket, it's first-class cricket, I'm still thinking about it just because I want to be prepared. But I am good at switching off and chilling, and I think that's why I like, Rachel, my wife, travels a bit with me when we go around. It just makes things a bit more normal when I come back from cricket. I can just spend time with her and just do little things that I do when I'm home, which just helps me relax and just not think about it, which is nice, and just brings a bit of normality when you're travelling and you're on the road all the time. But, yeah, as you said, I'm quite a relaxed guy, so chilling comes pretty natural to me.
And just on the lifestyle over there, you're talking about congested calendars before with last season. My understanding is that the life of a county pro these days is pretty congested as well. How forensic is it and physically demanding is it as well, being a county cricketer?
County cricket's never changed. It's always been ridiculous amounts of games. I actually don't know how they do it for a whole season, to be honest. Some of these guys, we literally can play a 4-day game, play a 1-day game straight after the 4-day game, travel up halfway across the country to play another game a day later. It's quite ridiculous. We've had a nice little break here, actually. We've had about 4 or 5 days off, and then we'll play back-to-back 4-day games, literally play a 4-day game, have a day off, and play another 4-day game, which is unheard of back home in Australia. So it can get pretty hectic, but I probably feel more for the bowlers, to be honest, than the batsmen at this stage.
Usman, it might sound like a really simple question, but where do you enjoy batting the most for Australia? Is it opening with the new ball? Is it batting 3, even 4 maybe? Because we see you in one day and test cricket. It's sort of been a bit of a movable feast with the Australian side.
Yeah, Yeah, look, and white ball stuff, I've always opened, I love opening, getting out there amongst you at the start. While the fielders are up, they can really take on the game, really enjoyed playing that role. In four-day and test match cricket, I prefer up in the top order somewhere. I've always preferred to bat three. It's actually batted four last week. It was actually quite nice to just sit down there and just relax and not have to worry about being next year, which is a little bit different, but... yeah, I think the top four is me, and it doesn't really matter where, but I prefer to be in the top four. Just, you know, it's where I've always been my whole life, up in the top of the order, but anywhere around there, it doesn't really bother me too much.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.